Chapter 2, A Young Bullock Without Blemish, Ezekiel 46:6. It was hard not to stare mesmerized at the coals, alternating between glowing orange and ashy white, as the evening breezes tried to decide which direction they would chase. There had been a puff or two of smoke as the kindling had licked at the tinder, but now it burned hot and clean. Not even the sharpest-eyed Ganava would have made out their camp from their caves on the western cliffs. Miri reheated some flatbread over the coals and spread a tangy paste of lentils and beans over the bread.
"Just like Ima used to make,"
Yeshu smiled as he chewed. He was glad he could be eating leavened bread again. He always tired of eating matzah a few days before Pascha was over.
"Your Ima would have had mutton and barley as well," she retorted. "But I do have my Ima's secret ingredient."
"Someday I'm going to find out what that secret ingredient is," he smiled. Watching the glowing coals and missing the taste and chewiness of some mutton, his mind strayed to standing near the raging fires and billowing smoke of the altar at the temple, the second time their family had made the trek up to celebrate Pascha in Yerushalayim. The smell was almost overpowering. The temple kahenei were better than his hometown priests at making sure none of the animal's pelt got near the flames, so the smell of burning hair did not pollute the pleasant aroma of a little fat dripping into the fire alongside the browning and roasting mutton.
"Ima," he had asked, "why is it just the blood, fat, and bowels that are burned? Does Adonai not like the good meat like we do?"
He had noted the racks of ribs and tenderloin roasting at the top of the altar and being picked at by the staff, the less prime cuts being given back to the person who had brought the offering.
"Has Antigonos been filling your head with Yavanna stories again?"
his mother smiled.
"Did he tell you that Zeus and Hera feast on the smoke from the offering?"
"But that is what most Yehudaya think, too, Ima," he quickly replied.
"Sadly, yes," she sighed. "But contrary to what most people think, ours is a world without bears or forests."
This was her usual phrase for devaluing traditions she thought were not necessarily true.
"You doubt the story of Elisha, the children, and the bears?" he asked her,
remembering the saying of their Rav that the children emerging from the forest had been miraculous enough, there being no forests or bears where Elisha had lived.
"I have reason enough to doubt some small parts of what has come to us as Adonai's words. Some of the sayings and stories have the accent and the voice of man. I know the word of Adonai," she said with an intense gleam in her eye. "I have known that word in my bowels, my son, and one day you too will come to know what the word of Adonai truly is."
A long moment of silence passed between them, her with one hand on his shoulder and the other petting the hair on his head. Then Yehuda started squawking because of hunger. Miriam adjusted the sling he was carried in to bring him to her breast, and then gathered Yaakov, Martha, and Shimon close. She pointed them toward the altar and, in her teaching voice, explained to them about the sacrificial ordinance.
"When we celebrate Pascha, children, we don't offer a weak, sick, or wounded animal. We bring the best we have, the strongest, the most beautiful. Only such an one is worthy of shouldering the weight of our burden of sin, the weakness of our cowardice, and the frailty of our sickness. See how the father cuts the throat of the beast, and the priest catches the blood in a cup? They pass it up the line to the priest at the altar, who pours out the blood over the horns. Then they slice the belly of the poor thing, pull off its skin, and pull out its entrails. The skin is given to the tanners, the fleece is made into clothing, while the skin becomes a wine sack, or, if unblemished enough, into the roll for Adonai's word. Its fat and entrails are put on the fire and burned to ash.
Viraya hiva et riach hanichoach,
Yeshua chanted as he remembered how Adonai had smelled Noach's offering of incense upon Ararat.
Adonai does not consume the smoke as a meal, but it is to him a pleasant aroma, he murmured.
Something lined up behind his eyes, allowing him to see the symbolism a little clearer. This had been happening much more to him since he first came to Yerushalayim a few years back.
It is like the Ketorah, burned inside the temple, which is like our prayers. Adonai is pleased when we talk to him, and perhaps more pleased when we give him something of our own.
He noticed that Yaakov was reaching out to tug at Marta's braids, so he quickly caught Yaakov's hand in his and made him pet her head instead.
Then he can have mercy on us?
Ima nodded approvingly.
And except in the Alata, where the beast is completely burnt, part of that mercy is that we get to eat some of the meat. What was best in the animal can become the best part of us, making us a little more like the sacrifice.
Is it really the animal, its blood and meat, that atone for our sins?
He asked.
I mean, yes, it is something of a burden to sacrifice an animal, but seeing as how we get to eat it, is it enough for us to kill a beast? How can that make up for the things we do?
He looked down at Yaakov, who he could tell was simply aching to pull his sister's braids. Yeshu looked at him through lowered eyebrows and a mock sternness.
Shouldn't we have to do something harder to pay for the things we do wrong?
No, that's bears and forests, my boy, she laughed. Nothing we can ever do will make good what we have done bad. Then she reached over to guide Marta away from Yaakov.
That is what Mashiach will do. The sacrificial lamb is but a shadow of him.
Be'at HaMashiach b'mehera b'yameneu.
May he come soon.
While other people occasionally mentioned the coming of the Anointed One when they spoke of better times to come, Ima used the phrase much more often and usually put it in some sort of context, not just a wish.
When will Mashiach come?
He had asked then. Her reply was somewhat shadowy itself, and although it was bright in his memory, he was not sure he yet understood it.
Too soon for me, but he will come to you at the right time.
He recalled a tear that had sprung from her eye and fallen on his tunic. The intensity of the memory evaporated as he looked down and saw some bean mash smeared across his robe. He glanced over his wife with a sheepish gaze, who rolled her eyes and shook her head slightly, a tiny smile twitching at the end of her mouth. He seldom made it through mealtime without spilling something on himself. They silently chewed the savory meal while watching the sun descend behind the western hills, the vault of heaven transformed into a perfect gradient stretching from orange-red in the west to midnight blue over the Yordan. He retrieved their wineskin from his bag, and they washed the meal down with a few swigs of wine, leaving it half empty. She had to pick a few globs of paste from his beard and brush crumbs from his tunic before she would accept the grateful kiss he offered for a tasty meal. He added a few more twigs to the fire and banked the coals with his walking stick, while she smoothed out a spot to sleep and arranged the blankets. But he was not ready for sleep. He touched her lightly on her hip as he stood up and circled his finger a few times in the air. She shrugged and nodded, and went on with her preparations. He drummed his fingers at his side for a moment, deciding which way to go, and then set off back up the rise to the road.